Your Partner in Success Radio is a free business podcast with host Denise Griffiths. It's all about great stories, conversation, and context to help you move your business and life forward with actionable tips and advice from her guest experts. To listen and subscribe, just find us on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you consume your podcasts.
Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and today I get to welcome back to the show Lucas Root. Now, Lucas is an accomplished speaker, entrepreneur, and business success mentor with over 19 years of success across banking, technology, investments, health and wellness, athletics, and interactive media. He doesn't sleep much, I don't think. Lucas also specializes in speaking to entrepreneurs and business owners on getting their strategies back on track for success and growth. Now, as mentioned, Lucas has been here before, and you can listen to our previous episode, The Keys to Startup Success, anywhere you consume your business podcast. Just type in that name or his name, Lucas Root, or even my name, Denise Griffiths, and you'll be able to find it. So Lucas has had the opportunity to speak to numerous audiences in North America, Australia, and Europe, as well as the opportunities to partner with businesses and VCs for mentoring. His recent professional talks have addressed working from home, and we all are still talking about that and trying to work it out, and specifically building the skills, routines, and tool sets into your day to sustain, create, and sustain productivity in whatever it is that you're doing, because things are different these days. They really are. So today, Lucas joins us to talk about strategy, leadership, complex communication, and teamwork. Lucas, good morning. Welcome back to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm excited to have you here.
Good morning, Denise. I'm really excited to be back. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. We had so much to talk about the last time you were here that I think I remember midway saying, we're not going to make it. Can you come back? And you very graciously said, of course, I did do it in the middle of the radio and you couldn't say no, but I mean, here you are. So anyway, you have been, I know we need to talk about strategy and communication and teamwork, because things really, working from home has changed how we operate, a lot of us. I've always worked from home, for quite a number of years. And frankly, I wouldn't know how to work in somebody else's office. I'd probably get kicked out by noon. But seriously, I would.
You'd make it through at least one day.
You think? You have faith. I have none. Either that or I would leave by noon. I'm not sure which would happen. But anyway, tell people a bit about yourself before I get rocking and rolling, because I've got a ton of questions. And really what I want you to do is just share your wisdom and your knowledge with a very hungry audience.
Awesome. I am excited. It's true, I don't sleep much.
I don't either.
for better or worse. I'm one of those people that does pretty well on 6 hours. Actually, I do very well on 6 hours of sleep. It's funny, when my wife first met me, this is kind of a little bit of embarrassing, but a funny story. We started dating and I am very well read. Those extra 2 hours a day, I don't watch TV or play video games, I read. And she looked at me one day and she goes, is there something you're not telling me? And I had no idea what she was talking about. So it took a little while to coax that out of her, but apparently people who are as well-read as I am at that younger age oftentimes have spent a little bit of time in jail.
Oh, I was wondering where you were going with this, because I read incessantly and I have been known to wake up at 2 and 3 in the morning. Like you, I sleep 6 hours, but I do it in segments, never all in a row. Mm-hmm. If I sleep 6 hours in a row, I'm groggy actually. But you know, when other people are sound asleep, that's magic for me. I'm reading. I totally get it. And like you, I don't watch TV either. Although it's Halloween season, so I do have DVDs to watch.
Nice. I love good TV. And I do watch TV with my wife. We probably watch half an hour to an hour a day. But, you know, the entire rest of the day is filled with either producing or learning.
Right. I understand. So I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I completely get what you're talking about.
Well, you actually opened up a really interesting aside that I think would be fun for us to at least drop a little nugget here. It's actually very common for humans as an animal to sleep in two different chunks. The fact that it's common has been lost to modern knowledge. But if you read really old journals, not like books, nobody was writing about this because it was so common, why would you bother? But if you read really old journals, you'll hear people talking about what they did in between their first and second sleep. In that way, I woke up after my first sleep, I did blah, 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 I went back down for my second sleep. And it's so, it is so colloquial, the way that they talk about it, that it's clear that it's very, very common. It's common language. It's a common thing. And then up to about 300 or 400 years ago, it was common, and then it disappeared, completely disappeared, fell off the map. It went extinct overnight.
And see, I agree with you. I sleep in chunks. I have never, unless I'm dying, literally really, really sick, which almost never happens, I don't sleep 3 or 4 hours in a row. If I do, I wake up disoriented. I'm groggy. I'm wondering what the hell, who hit me with a sandbag. I don't like it.
Yeah. Yeah. And the people who write about this often are people who are relatively prolific writers anyway. So it's not hard to get a hold of their journals because people have saved that. But they talk about how their most creative time of the day is in between their first and second sleep. Again, using that colloquial language, like it's a common thing. Of course, everyone knows what a first and second sleep is, you know?
And see, that's what happens to me. Once I am able to go to sleep, I wake up, I wake up at 3:18 no matter what, because I have turned over something subconscious for review. And that's whatever time the universe says, hey, Denise, I got it. Here's your answer. But I will also, you know, I may stay up. I've been known to clean the house, make tacos, make a gumbo, read a book. You know, I'm wide awake. Then I may fall asleep, you know, somewhere between, I don't know, 5 and 5:30, because I have to get up at 6 to feed the cats. But yeah, that you're right. That magic time for me is during, in between those sleeps. And thank you, because I never looked at it like first and second sleep. I've just always done this. So it feels very natural to me.
Yep. Cool. Well, that was a fun little sidetrack.
Very much so. Now I don't feel quite as, because you have people say, oh, you need 8 hours. No, I really don't. I really do not. So I do get a little bit tired of, you know, arguing about it. It's not an argument, but I'm just saying, no, my body doesn't accept that. So thank you for sharing that. So anyway, we are going to talk about several very important things. And sorry, my hashtag cat, hashtag Hamilton is an ass, is talking to me loudly. So I'll just apologize for him right now. But we're going to talk about strategy, leadership, complex communication, and teamwork. Of course, we're talking about the changes that we have all worldwide experienced because of the pandemic, COVID. And, you know, I don't like the word pivot. I really don't. But I do love the word adapt. And I think that's what we're talking about today.
Yeah. So I'm going to sort of kick it off with communication, because it's something that people spend a lot of time thinking about. And we kind of segued into it when we talked about the colloquialism of the first and second sleep.
Okay, go. I'm going to mute and stay out of the way.
Wow. I mean, I thought this was going to be a conversation.
But I'm going to try not to interrupt you too much. Not a promise. Yeah. I'm just going to try.
Okay. So we spend a lot of time thinking and talking about communication. But I think that many people don't think of communication as a skill or even a skill group. And so I'd like to propose the notion that communication is a skill or a skill group, a group of communication-related skills. The reason that I think it's important for us to...
And you know what, I have to ask you this, because I've heard this mentioned time and time again as a soft skill. I don't think it's a soft skill at all. So you keep talking and I'll figure out if I'm right or way off base.
I completely agree. The here's another aside. The term soft skill is not it's not intended to be the opposition of a hard skill. It's intended to suggest that a skill that is theoretically quote unquote a soft skill could be downloaded like software. Which is a really neat idea, but that's not the way it works. Humans don't actually download skills. We do download information, and we can talk about that in a different talk if we'd like to, but we don't download skills. We build our skills, and they're the result of active participation in whatever it is that we're trying to build on and build through. I don't actually have a problem with the term soft skill, except that it's based on a premise that doesn't work. We don't download skills.
I agree. Now, I've always heard, you know, oh, he's got the gift of gab, which I guess is one way of saying soft skill. But to me, the most important part of communication is actually, I can't talk today. I don't know why. I just can't. But it's actually listening. Listening to me is the most important thing that you can actually do.
Yeah, and you know, they say God gave you two ears and one mouth because you're supposed to listen twice as much as you talk.
Right.
I like the premise of that statement. I would like to say that I think I listen probably 10 times as much as I talk, in that I listen to my books, right? It's reading, but I'm still listening, right? And I listen to my family. I listen to my friends. I get on podcasts like yours, and I listen to experts speak, and I spend a lot of time, probably 10 times as much as I talk, maybe even more, listening.
Well, listen, I do the same thing. In fact, I'm having trouble with my voice today and speaking today because, honestly, I haven't talked to anybody or anything or about anything for at least 48 hours. Other than to, you know, tell a cat to stop doing whatever the heck he's doing, I really have not spoken much, and my voice is suffering a bit for it. But
you don't get up in the morning and do Ron Burgundy mirror voice workouts?
No, I don't. But this morning I was out actually because the moon woke me up at, you know, somewhere between my first and second sleep. And it was shining right in my face, and I went, oh.
The moon last night was stunning.
I know. So I went out, took my dogs outside, never said a word, just, you know, woke them up, took them outside with me, and just stared at the moon. It was beautiful.
Yeah.
But no, no talking. You're my first person to talk to today, so here we are. So if I stumble a bit, it's my own fault. I apologize for that. But anyway, and I kind of lost our train of thought there. So we're talking about, I guess what you're really saying is active listening.
Active listening is a component skill of the skill group communication, yeah.
Okay.
Other skills. Mm-hmm.
No, keep going. I thought I had a question, but turns out I didn't.
Yeah. The other skills that I pay attention to, and I'm sure that we can go pretty deep into these, I would hesitate to call language itself a skill, although it is, and I can come back to why I hesitate to call it that. But the other skills are reading body language and reading facial expressions, speaking, and all of these skills, listening, active listening, emotional listening, each of these skills. I wouldn't say that they are little pieces of communication. I would say that they are actually standalone skills all on their own. And people who spend time developing that skill, emotional listening, right, reading facial expressions, the better you can get at developing that skill, the more valuable that skill is in itself. And we can look at people like salesmen, which is a great example of someone who should be an expert at communication, right? Because the whole purpose of sales is not actually to convince someone to buy something. It's to convince someone to buy your something when they were going to buy something from this product suite across the market anyway, right? So I'm going to go buy a car. A salesman's job is to convince me to buy their car, but I was already going to buy a car. And in order for them to be good at that, they have to be great at listening to what it is that I need, listening to what it is that I want, and communicating, helping me to see that the things that I need and the things that I want exist inside their product, right? In a car salesman, they need to know that I need a thing that gets me from A to B. I want, let's say, an electric car or something that has really good gas mileage. I want a red car. I want it to be between 3 and 6 years old. These are just examples, of course. And it's the salesman's job to listen to that and to line up those needs in his little, you know, internal checklist inside his brain or hers, to line up those needs with what his or her product provides, right? Now, the reason I'm bringing up sales is because in communication, many people recognize that communication and sales are very strong together. You need to be great at communication to be a salesman. But there are other pieces, right? There's emotional listening. To be a really fantastic salesman, you need to be able to tell how much my heart is in it, how much I want it. And to tie into that emotion that's inside of me. So that emotional listening is something that salesmen spend some time on. And the more that they spend on it, the better they get as salesmen. There's also communication skills like speaking etiquette, email etiquette, text message etiquette, right? As our technology and the way that we interact with the world changes and grows, we actually add new communication skills. They're not little tiny variants. They're actually their own special skill. We add those communication skills to the communication skill group. And the people that are really great at each one of these skills get to shine in the world. And what they do with that shine is up to them. They could make money because of it, or it could turn into other opportunities. Maybe they want to be, you know, a children's writer or something. So each of these skills in the communication stack helps you become better at interacting with your fellow humanity. Now, the big question is, why is it that communication itself as a skill group is so important? And here's an interesting thought for you. I'm going to go way back, Denise. I'm going to go way back to before we had any other technologies than primitive level weapons and dogs. And yes, I do consider dogs to be a technology.
Oh yeah, I have two of them. Trust me, they are. When look, between weather apps, no thanks. I've got pets. They're going to let me know exactly what's going on out there. Seriously.
It's true. It's true. They know when a storm is coming. So,
oh, yeah. They know when the mail lady's here. They know everything.
Yeah, they're way better than a doorbell. They know the mail lady before they get to the door. So way back in tribal times, in order for us to be successful hunters, it's true that we could go set traps and wait for a rabbit to wander into our trap. But interestingly, we have a hard time surviving on rabbits. So in order for us to be successful as an animal in the animal kingdom, we needed to be able to go hunt our prey, right? We needed to be able to go pick out the right fruits and the right vegetables. And anybody who spent any time in nature knows that nature doesn't necessarily like you rummaging around and doing stuff, right? Plants have spikes and they have, you know, think of poison ivy. They have poison inside of them to keep you from messing around with them. And
poison mushrooms.
Poison mushrooms are a great example.
Mm-hmm.
So we're an interesting animal, like some of the other omnivorous animals out there. We're an interesting animal in that we aren't born knowing exactly what we're supposed to eat. Many other animals are born knowing exactly what they're supposed to eat. But because we are not born knowing what we're supposed to eat, that means that we need to figure it out, right? And trial and error in nature is a rather harsh process. So somebody will try something. They'll learn either the easy way or the hard way that we should or should not eat that thing. And then that becomes knowledge that's available to the tribe. But that knowledge is completely useless by itself. I'm about to put up a social media post very shortly that sort of chucks a rock in the face of the statement, knowledge is power. Knowledge is not power. Knowledge by itself is absolutely worthless. Unless you actually put action behind that knowledge, the knowledge is just dead weight. And that's
meaning
the
you have to share the knowledge.
Yeah.
Okay.
You have to share the knowledge. You have to use the knowledge. You could know that this particular mushroom is poisonous and then choose to eat it anyway. And that's a perfect example of how knowledge in your head, even though you knew that it was poisonous, didn't serve you. Right? It was just dead weight. Knowledge without action is dead weight. It's nothing. So knowledge with action becomes something. And that's why we needed to develop communication, at least rudimentary communication, so that we could share that knowledge and ensure the survival of our tribe. Hey, I tried that mushroom. It gave me the shits for a couple of days. Maybe you all should not try that mushroom.
You think? It's like, hey, y'all, don't do that. Gotcha.
Exactly.
That was funny.
So communication is absolutely necessary for the survival of the human animal, but not simple communication, actually complex communication. And that's why I put that extra word on there, complex communication. See, if somebody was about to reach down and pick that mushroom and you ran over and waved your hands in front of them, that's a simple no, and they'll figure that out. But you have to do that for every single person in your tribe every single time they want to touch that mushroom. But complex communication means you pick the mushroom, you bring it to the tribe, and you say, hey, everyone, look at this. Stay away from mushrooms that look like this. It seems simple to us today because we're actually very good at complex communication.
But it doesn't really happen, does it? You know, people just go, oh, everybody knows that, and they go on, go do something different.
Yep. Going back to that first leap and second leap.
Right, right. And I'm so glad you brought up complex communication because I was actually scribbling. I'm having trouble with my S's today. Success, scribbling. Anyway, just bear with me. But I was actually writing that down on my little card here because I wanted to kind of go back to it because we were talking, and I don't mean to get you too far off, but we're talking about listening and an emotional listening. And these days, everybody's supposed to wear a mask. I don't, but I have reasons for that. We're not really able to see, you know, people's expressions unless they have very expressive eyes. Or like me, they're constantly giving themselves an internal concussion from rolling their eyes. But here's the thing. I don't know about you, Lucas, and I suspect that you, like me, are very aware of micro expressions, that you're watching, you're learning, you're not saying much, but you're seeing things that maybe other people who are chatting and waving their hands around and making it me, they're not seeing these expressions. And that leads me to wonder, because those micro expressions can tell you a whole heck of a lot. But these days with Zoom and with, you know, virtual everything, how does this emotional listening and micro expressions, how do they correlate, or do they? What should we be looking for?
Yeah, that's an awesome question. So we'll get to Zoom in a second. First, let's talk about how that applies to text messages, email.
Yeah.
Your company Slack channel. So we have evolved an expectation of a certain depth of communication. And that expectation, we carry that around in something that we call language context, right? So people who communicate inside different kinds of cultures, cultural language contexts, they have different levels of expectation on how much communication is required to convey an idea. So let me put a little bit of substance behind that statement. In Japan, people try to say fewer words. Expectation is, if you're listening carefully, you'll understand a deep and complex and maybe even wide idea from only just a few words. an example of that. God gave us two ears and one mouth. We're supposed to listen twice as much as we speak. Not a lot of words. It's actually a really deep and complex idea.
It is. I use because that example. You don't even have to go, you don't even have to explain what it is. It's right there.
Yeah. Yeah. I use that example because I know that there's a lot of context to that saying, that statement here in the United States, right? And in the English language. Another good example, an eye for an eye, right? It's a deeply contextual, very simple statement. So in Japan, they work hard as a culture to build their entire communication strategy around deeply contextual, simple statements. So they can communicate a lot with few words.
In the United States, we're what's called, I love it.
It's cool, right?
Very
much so. In the United States, we're in the middle of a spectrum. We have a relatively medium context communication. And in many cases, that medium rather than low comes from facial expressions and tonality. Now, the challenge for us is our expectation of the level of communication in facial expressions and tonality. It's relatively medium. We're not a high context culture like Japan. We're a medium context culture. That medium context gets completely lost in text messaging, right? So that's part of the reason why email etiquette and text messaging etiquette has started to become a valuable skill. Many people in corporate America are learning email etiquette and text messaging etiquette by accident. They don't even know that they're learning this as a skill.
And see, I don't know. People stopped doing this, I guess, because I created such a fuss. But, you know, what was it? It was called Twitter speak. You know, everything was you are instead of spell it out, you are. And I actually got resumes from people who did their entire resume in this tech speak. You can about imagine where those went. No, you are not going to dumb me down. And right or wrong, that's how I view it. We're dumbing ourselves down by not using proper hello, goodbye, you know, salutations, comma, the Oxford comma. I mean, we are actually, I think,
I love the Oxford comma.
Me too. I'm telling you. But it just seems to me that if you show and you look like, and I'm going to say it on the radio, you look like a dumbass. What do you think people are going to, you may be one of the smartest people in the room, but you don't present yourself that way. And you're being rude by saying, hey, instead of, hello, Denise, I would like to introduce myself. You know, that kind of thing. There is so much to learn that honestly, we learned it in grade school. Where did it go?
Yep. It's a context etiquette crossover. And it's an accident that people make when they don't learn these skills separately. Right? So there's nothing wrong with Twitter speak. We only have 160 characters, and we need to get as much into those 160 characters as we can. And so for that medium only, I personally think it's appropriate for people to create a higher context environment using the letter U instead of Y-O-U, the letter R instead of A-R-E. That's a higher context environment. I think it's appropriate to create a higher context environment for that medium because of the fact that the medium requires it. Another example of this, when soldiers are out and they're moving up on an enemy camp, they don't stop to talk about what they're about to do. It's a very high context environment. A few fingers waved in a specific way conveys a very complex idea, and everybody in that team understands exactly what those few fingers waved in that specific way means. Right? So if all of you are seeing a picture in your head of, you know, a soldier with three fingers pointing in one direction and two fingers pointing in the other direction, and, you know, a specific wave and a specific waggle in the fingers and the hand, right? This is very high context, very high, super high context communication. And like Twitter, it's very appropriate. Now, soldiers know that if they walk into the office of their superior officer, they don't start waving their fingers around, right? That's context etiquette crossover. When you're speaking to your superior officer in an office, you use etiquette that's appropriate to the space, etiquette that's appropriate to the conversation. Another example of this, if I go to a burger joint with a couple of my buddies and we sit down and we eat burgers with our hands, there's nothing wrong with that. If I go to a five-star restaurant and I order anything, including a burger, and I start eating the entire meal with my hands, it would be appropriate for everybody in that restaurant to look at me like I'm a heathen. Context,
gotcha.
Etiquette crossover.
And wherever you are, I mean, the situation that you are in dictates how you communicate.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, keep going. This is fascinating.
I'm wondering if we should not move on, because we're on a really good roll with communication. We still have three other skills. Maybe we
should just
stay focused on communication.
Let's say it is important, and it's important. Yes, and we can bring you back again in the new year. Poor you. You're going to become a regular, I suspect.
But that's you say that like you. It's a bad thing.
Well, I don't know if you want to come back, but you have to. So, but here's the thing. I agree with you because these
Here you
things,
are, ambushing me again in the middle of a show.
I know. I'm very good at that. It's tricky. And I admit that it's tricky. But definitely, let's stay with complex communication, because with the way people are communicating or have to communicate these days, a lot of it is brand new. Look, you know, Zoom,
yeah.
You get on Zoom and you're watching these people, and I don't know about you, more than about two people on a Zoom is just way too much for me, because I'm bouncing back and I get a little bit confused. Truthfully, I would rather hear the audio than watch people's faces. That's just how I operate. But things are very, very different. So, I mean, just as a for instance, I was talking with one of my clients who is accepting an award that she won in her industry, a very prestigious award. The event gala had to be online for the first time. And I remember telling her, she said, yeah, she said, I just don't even really know how to do this. And I said, well, I had a podcast guest recently who was talking about get your points heard, you know, get your words heard, but on Zoom and on these virtual events. And he said something that kind of stuck with me, because you know me, I don't like cameras. There are no pictures of me on the internet, nor will there be. And I remember telling her that, because it stuck with me, I said, he said very clearly, don't look down at your keyboard, don't look at the other faces in the room, look directly at that blank looking camera. You know, you can't mm-hmm. see anything, you know, but look there. And she did. And it was brilliant, because it looked like she was really engaged and that she wasn't looking at her notes. So it's all communication is in context to where you are. And I think people are figuring that out finally.
Yeah. And I'm happy to see it. So we've cleared this idea of context, an important aspect, an important component of how you approach communication to a specific situation, Twitter being, you know, the one that we came to first. I treat text messages and email in almost the same way. I presume that all of my written communication is relatively low context, lower context even than my spoken communication, because at least there you can hear my tone of voice. So the negative of that is that it results in me using more words and taking more time to write my communication. The positive of that is that my presumption on my end that it is a low context environment frees up the recipient of my communication, the person on the other end or the people on the other end, from having to assume what I mean when I say relatively high context phrases. So carrying that context inside that communication method turns out to be really valuable for me.
Well, let me ask you this, because I have found I have to do a lot of emailing with my clients, with, you know, podcast mm-hmm. guests. I mean, I'm always on email. I don't text a whole lot because, frankly, I protect my phone almost like it's my, you know, the front door to my house. I don't give that number out to many people. Maybe 10 people in the world have it. And if they got it somehow and I didn't give it to them, they get blocked. It's like, no. It's that's mine. I don't give it away. So what I have found, and we're talking about email and we're talking about expectations, I have found, and this is part of that, I guess, that micro expression, but in a digital world, some of my clients, some of the people that I know, I have to keep it Homer Simpson, you know, simple, seriously. They can be, and one of my clients in particular is one of the brightest people I've ever known, but he doesn't get past the second sentence. If I don't have his attention in that first sentence, and it is Homer Simpson simple, I get emails, well, what about this? Did you read the email? And I've given up arguing with them about it. It's in there. I just make sure it's very simple and there's a couple of bullet points and we're done. Then other people really want a lot of information. So I think by paying attention to the people that you deal with the same way you would if you were seeing them in person is a good thing. You have to be cognizant of what it is that they're expecting of you. Does that sound about right? Okay.
Yeah, I agree. And what you're telling me is that you have built up a contextual depth in your communication relationship with different people.
I have.
Isn't that a great way to put
Go
it?
Go me.
A contextual depth at the relationship level.
I just got a gold star. Yay.
Yeah, you did. So, all right, let's move on past text so that it doesn't become a dead horse and we don't have to kick it. Next, I'd like to point out the different ways of communicating in video media before we get to Zoom. So everybody is familiar with the TV shows and movies that they watch. In movies, you don't ever look at the camera, right? There are a few examples where somebody looked at the camera and addressed the camera. And in fact, anybody who spends some time reading about this, even today, you know, the fourth wall has been broken. People have addressed the camera in movies and dramatic TV shows. So it's not unheard of, but it's still so rare that every time it happens, it's actually newsworthy. Breaking that fourth wall, addressing the camera in a dramatic
Do you have an example you can share? I really don't watch TV much. I mean, I can go. I looked at my TV the other day because I've, you know, loaded up my Halloween stuff. I mean, I've got a bunch of Halloween DVDs. I'm an idiot for October. I love this time of year. And I realized that I had not actually turned the television on in probably 3 or 4 weeks. So do you have some?
Wow.
You know, yeah, I really just don't want. Give me a book. Give me a stack of books. I'm a happy person. But TV, I'll listen to it. Sometimes I'll turn it on and I'm listening, but I'm not watching it. So do you have any, you know, some kind of context that you can share? Because I'm actually a bit confused about the fourth wall.
So the two that come to my mind are American Psycho and Fight Club. And I know I'm dating myself a little bit when I talk about either of those, but seriously, anyone who hasn't seen them probably should. Christian Bale in American Psycho was crazy good. And Fight Club remains a cult classic today. Cases. The main character actually addresses the screen directly. You see him speaking to you, the audience, directly. And it's in a movie.
Okay.
I don't remember the scenes or the statements, but you know, a quick Google search would give us that, right? And your audience can do that too.
Right.
But those are the two that pop into mind for me. American Psycho and Fight Club, I think, are fantastic examples of that.
Okay, I'll have to go look for those.
Yeah, and it's. Again, it's newsworthy when it happens because it happens so rarely. I could probably find some TV show examples as well, but I don't have any in my head. Sorry.
No. The audience, you know, now that we're talking about it, if they're curious, they can go find. So keep on going. We've only got about 20 minutes left, and we've got still so much to keep talking about in complex communication. So when I start interrupting, tell me to knock it off. I might kind of sort of do it. I'll try.
Oh, I don't mind. Your audience might, and if they do, they'll tell you in the comments that we need Lucas
sorry.
Back. Talk about this
okay,
more.
Okay, keep going. Yeah.
So in entertainment, which absolutely is a communication method, and the best entertainment is actually trying to share an idea and using entertainment to keep you riveted as the idea is built inside your head, right? So in entertainment, you don't speak to the camera. And when you do, it's surprising. It's newsworthy. It's a huge, it's like using 3 exclamation points in an email, right? Whoa, he just used 3 exclamation points. However, in news, the news anchor, the person who's sharing the news, talking about the story, they actually do speak directly to the camera. So this is another example of how there is context in the medium. Right? The news anchor, the reporter, the journalist, they actually speak to you. Now let's look at written communication and see if it's similar. How often does a novel writer speak to the reader? Almost never, right? Novels, similar to dramatic entertainment, you don't break the fourth wall. If you do, it's really surprising.
And jarring,
however,
I would think. You know, it would
seem
to
be. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking of a few things where I've seen, or, you know, books and authors and I'm like, whoa, how did you break communication there? Because to me, it was almost a break. It's jarring, and now my attention span is like, I'm going to go make a tuna salad sandwich. I mean, I can't do this anymore. So it's just, yeah, I see what you're talking about. So let's go into the written communication, because I think that's important too. And people need to learn some damn manners. Excuse the language. It drives me crazy. Okay, keep going.
I'm not saying that the fourth wall should not be broken, but I am saying that that should be treated as very nearly sacrosanct. You should treat it as though breaking the fourth wall is something that only gets done. I mean, you know, if Stephen King decides to break the fourth wall in one of his novels, I probably will accept that there's really good reason for that, because he is a hell of a writer. But if a relatively new novelist does it, like you, I probably am going to, you know, put the book down and go and make myself a tuna salad sandwich, because there's a presumption, whether it's appropriate or not, that relatively new writer might be the best thing since sliced bread. There's a presumption that you have to earn the right to do things that are bold.
Gotcha.
And breaking the fourth wall in dramatic cinema and dramatic entertainment novels is very bold. However, journalism is quite the opposite. If a journalist isn't speaking to the reader or to the watcher, you might wonder why. Unless it's an interview, then it kind of makes sense. You might wonder why. You know, if a journalist is giving a news story where they're back to the camera, probably you're going to lose your attention. Right? So there's, again, contextual communication here. Same thing with written journal. Somebody who's actually writing a piece that's going to be published in the New York Times or the Huffington Post or the Wall Street Journal, my expectation is that they are speaking directly to me, the consumer of that information. And if they're not, my guess is most people are not going to pay very much attention for very long.
Well,
right?
It really is all
go
about
ahead.
How we are accepting the communication, isn't it? I mean, it seems important to know who it is that you're speaking to and how you want to communicate. And if you're just kind of willy-nilly running around trying different, I don't know, headlines, you know, just look at me, I think you're going to lose credibility and interest, and people are just not going to pay any mind to you at all after a while. It's context and it's content and it's where you are.
Yeah. And then there's that little extra piece that you introduced already, Denise, that little extra piece that allows for a building of context within the relationship. And that's kind of why I brought up Stephen King. Stephen King has a very loyal following. If he were to break the fourth wall, he would do it by speaking to that very loyal following. And he has such depth of context in the relationship he has with his following that those people would find that to be acceptable if he did it in the right way. And I trust that he would. I'm one of his followers, right? So it's that contextual depth in a relationship, which you do, Denise, in your emails. Some people you have very low context, i.e. you use a lot of words. You need to be Homer Simpson simple. Some people you have very high context. And that's at the relationship level. So we start out low context in text, and we should move towards high context as the relationship develops. And that's true of novelists, and that's true of journalists, right? If they have a very devoted, very loyal following, they can move into a more high context environment in that relationship because they know that their readers understand when they use fewer words to describe a complex idea.
That is actually brilliant. So here's my thought as you're talking, because listen, we all email. I mean, email some days is just, I hear that little beep and I'm like, no more, please no more. But we communicate vast amounts of information and recipes and, you know, pictures of our tree that just fell down during a hurricane. I mean, we're communicating all the time. And here's my thing with keyboard warriors, and I'm guilty because, and I'm talking about myself here, it's easy to do as my client does. I hope he's not listening. God bless him. He knows I love him, but sometimes I just want to say, stop, just read the darn thing. But we're getting better about communicating because now I know what he expects or requires in terms of attention span, and I'm able to fulfill that. But here's the thing. So many people, I guess, because it's quick and easy, it's like, oh, I'll just send a response. It's almost like you don't listen. You're not reading it either. So you're not taking into consideration those invisible or virtual micro expressions. I'm fascinated by those because I'm a people watcher. I'm always like, what did you just do? Hang on a second. That was pretty contemptuous. You didn't say a word, but I caught clear contempt from what you just, you know, crossed your face. I think that we as a populace need to get very good at reading those invisible micro expressions and responding accordingly. And don't just slap off something. You get an email like, oh, let me deal with this right now. Sit with it if you have to. Think about it if you have to. Write a draft if you have to. But don't just fire off something that could cause problems, and it happens all the time. I've done it. Yeah. I actually, for a while, had somebody on my team that I trusted sufficiently that I could, you know, send them a draft and say, is this going to get me hit in the nose? And he would say, yes, it is. Okay. And he'd rewrite it for me. So I think these days in particular, we have to be very, very careful about what we're writing because, you know, that's kind of forever.
Yeah. It is. I agree. And the stakes are high with the notion of forever. We haven't really internalized the idea that forever exists, right? In the context of our relationship with our culture, the notion of forever is still something that we haven't accepted. Otherwise, we'd see email etiquette classes, you know, when you're scrolling through Instagram, half of the ads you'd see would be email etiquette classes, and you don't see that. I'm not even sure. Let me do a quick Google search and see if there's anything out there.
Maybe. You know, years ago, I had a gal come on my podcast.
Ooh,
and
there is one.
Just one. Hey, I just found a new niche for myself. But this gal came on and she was talking, and I still sticks with me that she was working with millennials. I mean, she's kind of a headhunter, and she was working with a lot of millennials who wanted to, you know, grow and go up the ladder. And she said it was appalling. She couldn't take them anywhere. You're talking about the hamburger. She literally could not make money. son of a biscuit, make lunch dates with, you know, somebody who was looking for a very qualified candidate, because they had no manners. They didn't know to stand when a lady, you know, approached. They didn't know to take their hat off. They didn't know to use a napkin. She said it was appalling. So she actually had to create etiquette classes, physical etiquette classes, for people who were looking for a job. This was years ago. So it's, you know, kind of in that same vein that we're talking about.
Yeah, that's really cool. I wonder if
she's still doing
it.
Yep, she still is. She said it was just one of those things. She saw a need, and all of a sudden it became a new industry for her.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I'm interrupting
finally,
you. So I'm
we
sorry,
can come around
going.
To Zoom. Zoom is a really interesting new technology, right? Zoom, FaceTime, and all of the similar, you know, direct face-to-face interaction tools that we're using. It's brand new to us. Not only have we not fully internalized the notion of the forever that exists in email communication and in Twitter and in Instagram even, right? We still have another decade of interacting with these technologies before we're going to have cultural changes that allow us to understand that at a cultural level. And now we have Zoom, we have FaceTime. In many cases, these are recording technologies that allow somebody to create a forever experience, and you don't even necessarily know. It's not, I mean, the little recording button up at the top shows that it's being recorded, but this is still so relatively new that people may have forgotten to pay attention to the fact that it's recording. And then, because of the fact that they've forgotten to pay attention, they've also forgotten to be on their best behavior.
No kidding.
Now, your point, Denise, coming out of this is, wait a minute, why aren't they always on their best behavior?
Yeah. That's exactly right. I mean, does it come to etiquette? Does it come to back to awareness? Or are we just so comfortable behind those keyboards that we just don't think?
Mm-hmm. That's a good question. Even I, and, you know, we've heard that I spend a lot of time thinking about this stuff. Even I haven't fully wrapped my head around the context and the culture of direct video chat, right? It's still new. I've been doing it for years because you have to do it to be effective at working from home, and it's still new even to me. But here are a couple of guidelines that I've put in place for myself.
I was just going to ask you. Okay, go.
Yeah. The guidelines that I have in place for myself that help me make sure that I don't have something like, and you all should Google this exact thing, the flush heard around the world.
I know what you're talking about.
Yep. Just for those of you who want to hear it but aren't going to actually Google it, a person addressing the U.S. Supreme Court on a Zoom conference was in the bathroom and flushed their toilet.
It's awareness. I'm guessing we have to really, really, again, be aware of where we are, what the context is, what the content is, who our audience is, because we all have an audience no matter what we're doing, and just be, you know, have your head on a swivel. What's going on here? You know, if I got this, you know, is my fly shut? Do I have underpants on? I mean, there was that woman, I think she was a politician in Mexico, and she was naked in her closet getting dressed. First of all, she wasn't prompt. She didn't show up on time. When she did show up, she was trying to get dressed. She didn't know the camera was on, and everybody saw things they didn't need to be seeing.
The flush heard around the world.
Exactly right. I mean, it's easy to kind of giggle and laugh, but we have to be so aware, more so now, I think, than ever before, of how we're presenting ourselves, because cameras are everywhere. I mean, you can't
cameras
go anywhere in your car without getting, you know, somebody's taking a picture of you because you you're speeding 1 mile over the, whatever it is, but cameras really are everywhere, and you're constantly being watched, monitored, and judged. So let's try to make it to where the judgments are fairly decent, you know, like they liked us.
Yeah. So tip number one, we treat the outside world in a high context manner, and it's appropriate from the perspective of every single one of us went outside in our backyards that we played as kids until we got to the point where we knew where all the little rocks were in the yard so that we didn't go out barefoot and step on those rocks, right? And that's building context. And then after a while, we got used to the idea that poison ivy is poison and we shouldn't touch it. That's another level of high context, right? So we got to the point where we could go outside the house and treat the world in a high context environment. And by that, I mean, you don't have to stop and think about every single thing that you encounter because the communication of the world to you can use few words, right, to communicate a complex idea. Don't go near that tree. It has poison ivy on it. You don't have to think that thought in your mind anymore. It's immediate. It's automatic. That's high context. Now, there are cameras everywhere. And what that means is that we actually need to roll back the context of our relationship with the world, roll it back from high context to medium or even to low context. And by that, I mean, start thinking about everything that you're presented with. It takes extra work. It takes extra time. You're going to have to slow down. Let me tell you, slowing down a little bit is okay. But by rolling back the context of the world around you and your relationship, you're going to start to address situations more carefully, more slowly, in the same way you would if you were going out into somebody's backyard for the first time barefoot. You don't know where the rocks are. So you're going to address that relationship, that new relationship, more carefully, more slowly, so that you don't accidentally step on a rock and get hurt. Right? The same
so
is going to be true
you're
for...
Training yourself. You're training yourself to be far more aware than we have been in the past. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. And it's natural. It's appropriate for us to treat the world in a high-context relationship, right? It's natural and it's appropriate. But because technology is changing so much and the world around us is changing so much, we need to remember that the world out there today is very truly different than it was just yesterday, let alone 20 years ago. And because it's so different, we can't carry the same context for our relationship with the world as we did 20 years ago or even yesterday. We have to treat the changing of the world the same way we would a friend that we haven't seen in 20 years. Really, truly. It's somebody who's going to accept you and give you the opportunity to rebuild your relationship. But if you haven't seen each other for 20 years, the high context relationship you had back then is gone and you need to rebuild. And that's true of the world. So number one, roll back your context. And if you do that outside, it's going to be easier for you to do that inside on your Zoom meetings. Roll back your context. Don't presume that the camera is off. It's probably on. And treat that camera as though it's on all the time. Treat your communications across that camera as though you're communicating with someone who doesn't automatically understand your high context phrases. And that will save so much trouble. That will save you from the flush that was heard around the world.
Exactly. And here's a thought while you're talking. Listen, I live alone happily. I will always live alone. I've decided that living with other people is just not for me, and it's probably the best thing the world has ever heard. I'll be here all by myself. But the thing is, I have learned over time to treat myself the way I do. If I'm out and about, I'm not shy. I'm perfectly fine outside with other people. But I'm only good for 59 3/4 minutes, which I have figured out. But what I have learned over time is if I'm going to be out and about, you know, you get dressed, you've got your hair done, you've got your, in my case, stilettos on, you're treating yourself beautifully to put yourself out in the world to be observed. I do the same thing at home when I'm alone. I've got stilettos on right now. I do. Mm-hmm. They're strappy because it's nice and, you know, it's gorgeous outside. Now I'll have to swap them for Crocs when I go outside in a little bit with the dogs. But I treat myself the same way. And this took some doing, I have to tell you, because it's easy to get slovenly and lazy and just, oh, nobody sees me. The fact is, people see you. They see you through the way you treat them online. Mm-hmm. They see you the way you write to them in emails. They see how you, you know, you're operating by responding to things online. So I guess what I'm trying to say is treat yourself, no matter where you are, what you're doing, the way you would do if you were getting ready to stand in front of a podium. Stand up straight, get dressed, put your panties on, for crying out loud. You know, really, you know, don't go to work in a pair of stained sweats. I mean, just treat yourself well. And because you're treating yourself well, yeah, there you go. But because you're treating yourself well, I think it's just automatic that you will look for ways to treat other people well. It's a mindset.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How far off did I go from the path there? Okay, good.
No, I think that was a really good summation.
Oh, good. Listen, we talked a lot about complex communication, which I'm fascinated with, and I'm so glad you decided that we were going to stick with that. And we're not streaming any longer, but we are still recording, so nothing is going to get lost. But is there anything that you want to add to that particular topic that you think people really need to know?
Yeah. Everybody has a personal image. Anyone who hasn't seen The Matrix, please go watch The Matrix. The Matrix invented and really dramatized the notion of residual self-image. And I love the way they did it, right? When Morpheus is first sitting down with Neo in their separate side matrix that was built up so that Morpheus can have his conversation, and he has the glasses that stick on his face, and there are no earpieces for the glasses to hold on. And they talk about how Morpheus looks like this all the time, not because he wants to look like this. He can change how he wants to look. But because that's his residual self-image, that's how he automatically loads into the Matrix every time he boots in.
Oh. Okay. I have not seen it. My former husband wanted me to watch it with him, and I fell asleep and drooled, so I have not seen it. But I've read about it, and, you know, I probably should go look and see if I can actually stay awake for it. Movies just tend to bore the bejeebers out of me. But I will go look, because I like what you're saying there, that it's the residual. That makes sense to me. Makes a lot of sense. Okay. So, Lucas, anything else that you need to share before I bring you back again in the new year? I'm dragging you back, kicking and screaming.
I look forward to it. It won't be kicking and screaming. So on that residual self-image idea, we should all spend some time really examining what our residual self-image is of ourselves. Understand what you look like in your own mind palace when you boot yourself up. What are the clothes that you're wearing? Just when you boot yourself up, don't make any changes. How is it that you look to yourself in the quiet confines of your mind where nobody else can see you? And that's the place that you need to start in terms of building how you present yourself to the world. If you want to look like somebody who's well put together to the world, start by looking like somebody who's well put together to yourself.
Oh, listen, I agree. And when I tell you that, I mean, seriously, I rarely leave my home. My groceries are delivered. My car was delivered. I bought my home online. I really don't like to go out and about. But if you go into my closet, it looks like Nordstrom's threw up in there. You ought to see my shoe collection. It's sad. And I have a bag collection as well. But you know what? I go in there and I visit and I go, ooh. And I start from the shoes up. What shoes do I want to wear today? And that's how I go. Because I know I love my shoes. I mean, what woman doesn't? I take it to an extreme. they're important to me because if I'm strolling around my house and I'm wearing the cute little strappy sandals that I'm wearing right now with a stiletto, I'm happy. I'm standing up straight. I've got some punch in my walk. I'm not walking around going, well, what am I going to do next? It really is important to see yourself as you see yourself, truly see yourself. And it's easier to present a really decent you if you're proud of yourself.
Yeah. Yep. So that was the idea I really wanted to tap off with, is closing out that residual self-image and the idea that you first need to know how you look to yourself, and second, start to work with that.
And it's not just about how we look. It's how we present ourselves. It's how we speak. It's how we write. It's how we listen. It's everything, isn't it?
Yeah. It's all that one complex communication package.
I love that. I'm so glad we stuck with that. Lucas, thank you. I mean, this has been to me just a brilliant conversation, and I've got notes scribbled all over the place, and I very much look forward to having you come back in the new year where we can talk about strategy and leadership and teamwork, because, and something you said a bit ago really stuck with me, that yesterday has already changed how we're going to communicate and, you know, get our messages across and receive messages is going to change again by the time you come in January, February, whenever you schedule. So we definitely have a lot to talk about. So thank you. And listen, where can people find you before I let you go?
Yeah, I'm very active both on LinkedIn and on Instagram. In both cases, you can find me at Luke Root, LUCROOT. So LinkedIn, it's just linkedin.com/IN/Luke Root. And Instagram at Luke Root.
Perfect. Lucas, thank you so much. It has been truly wonderful speaking with you. And I thank you for all the wonderful tips and advice and really the mind images that you have shared with our audience. So much of what you shared, you know, I've got pictures in my head. I could understand everything you were saying by pictures. I mean, you speak very well in pictures. So thank you
for
that. I think in pictures, and you do too, I think. You know, we communicate that way. Brilliant. So anyway, before we say goodbye, I would like to remind our audience to be sure to look for us in iTunes, Stitcher, Google. I have to pat myself on the head. I found this podcast about a week ago. I found it in Prime Music Video, a Prime Music podcast.
Oh, cool.
Who knew? Yeah, so you can find us on Prime. So here we go. But anyway, thank you everybody for sticking with us, and you know, reach out to Lucas if you have any kind of questions about what we've been talking about. And like I said, just look for us, you know, everywhere. We're everywhere that you can find a business podcast. Just look for Your Partner in Success Radio and take us along on your success journey. Lucas, thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Get your voice heard. If you would like to launch your own far-reaching podcast, contact Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com and go to the podcast tab.